Totally Football Show. Today, getting excited for the weekend's action. Transfers. Jose Tarza doing 3-point turns in that old bus he was using and buys a Lexus. Arsenal, will they take the Mkhitaryan? And Theo later as Walcott moves to Everton. We ask why no one can buy Mike Ashley's tune. There's VAR and the Madding crowd. Modest proposals to make it less controversial. Give the managers a call. Give viewers a call with premium phone lines. And replace the man watching the TV studios with Loro. Plus, continental action. Hang the Dijon. PSG's gluten-free, wheat-nil Dijon demolition. And why the Parisians still booed Neymar. Plus, the buck stops here. Ronaldinho confirms he's staying retired. All that in the Totally Football Show. Totally Football Show today features Matt Scott.
Oh, hello. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
And Horny.
Hello.
When you're getting your own show, ask listeners.
Me?
Yeah. All right, that's awkward. We'll move on. Three big stories. Three big stories since we were last here doing Totally Show. Sean Dyche eats earthworms. That was one. Yeah. Phil Brown leaving Southend. That's another. And we'll be touching on those very shortly. And also, of course, that Sanchez to Man United business. Matt Scott, insideworldfootball.com. Has that happened yet, Sanchez to Man United?
Not yet, no. Oh. But Wenger's confirmed it's almost bound to.
Okay, is it dependent on Mkhitaryan going to the Emirates?
So we understand, yeah. And that's also very likely to happen.
Okay. Well, it's a massive deal, the one that they're supposedly offering.
Yeah, £500,000 a week. I mean, what a grasping little diva.
That's one perspective. In strictly football terms, Michael, a lot of people asking, how would zonal marking use Alexis in this United 11? Whose place does he take?
I think that's a very good question, actually. I mean, he's been playing on the left for Arsenal for the majority of his time there. I think it'd be a great shame, really, if it was, to mean less opportunities for Martial or Rashford to a certain extent, who I think has sometimes done well there. But I can't really see Mourinho using him anywhere else. I don't think he's a classic Mourinho striker. I think he can play number 10. He did that well in Serie A. Again, I can't see Mourinho using him there. So I think it's going to be the left wing slot. Mm. And I must say, I'm not a massive fan of him there. I think he's quite selfish when he plays on the left. He's always looking to come inside and shoot. Personally, I like to see him more centrally. He played there at the start of last season for Arsenal. And his goal return was excellent. And they kind of moved away from that when Giroud came into the team. But I would like to... Well, I don't think he's going to play as a centre-forward. But personally, I think that's his best position.
I mean, do you see him playing just off Lukaku? Or, I mean, in that case, yeah, Jesse Lingard's done so well in December. He's really sort of found himself in that role. Would that mean him being out of the team then?
Maybe. I mean, I'd be surprised if Mourinho played both him and Lukaku in the central positions. I do think he'll be a left-wing role for Alexis. I wonder whether Lukaku's position is completely secure. You know, with Martial having a good season, Rashford, I think, is continuing to progress. When he's got opportunities, he's played very well. Lukaku hasn't done well in recent weeks. And I think what Sanchez likes is he likes quick football. He likes to kind of orchestrate 1-2s. And I think of all those players, Lukaku's probably the least comfortable playing kind of quick passing football compared to Martial or Rashford, who I think are very good in terms of link-up play. So there's lots of options. There's Zlatan to consider as well. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I'm really not sure there's an obvious place for Sanchez.
Right. Yeah, well, just wait for the dressing room unity to split apart
well,
the
scenes.
Well,
that was my next question. To what extent do you think this will... Because Man United is a club, I believe I'm right in saying, that traditionally has been fairly resilient in terms of its dressing room unity, despite the big characters coming in and out. But you feel this might be...
Well, I think just from body language and you know, and from what you hear about individuals and their relationships with him on the training ground, it was very, very clear that he and Giroud, he and Ramsey and you know others in the Arsenal team did not see eye to eye, to the extent they didn't even receive the ball when he had it. And you know, if he feels like he dislikes somebody, it seems to me that the team suffers because when people are in good positions, he won't play it.
For all the many issues that we have with Jose Mourinho, is he the kind of manager who would effectively not allow that kind of thing in his team?
What to a certain degree, but if you're paying somebody £26 million a year and they
are what it is,
that's what it is, and you're not and they're not passing the ball, what can you do? You've got to play him. I mean, it's a huge. That's what it's reportedly going to be,
right? Which puts Sanchez quite high on the kind of global GDP stakes, ahead of A lot of countries. No, literally ahead of a lot of countries.
Yeah, but the highest paid player in the world alongside Messi and Neymar, yeah.
But this idea that Sanchez is really selfish, it's a relatively recent development. I mean, for the first couple of years at Arsenal, he was renowned as a player who worked really hard, who was a team player, who was a great individual. I appreciate the last few months has become a little bit ridiculous. He's having a bit of a strop because he doesn't want to be at Arsenal.
I think 18 months he's been like that.
Maybe longer, but I'm not sure that
Udinese back in the day, he was, I think, seen as a tremendously valuable asset for that team.
Well, someone who would play through the pain barrier, which is something that Mourinho has often used to criticise other players that he's had at United and at Chelsea. You know, Arsene Wenger always used to talk about this sort of red zone, and Sanchez would invariably demand to play through it, whatever. So I think that suggests that, at least in terms of keeping himself fit, he's a very good professional. I also think, to go back to that Udinese, his past there, I think where that helps is that they used to play a lot on the counter-attack, him and Di Natale. He was very good at bringing the ball forward. And you look at United in sort of big six games against the other top sides, that's invariably a tactic they use with that kind of low block. They don't try and take the game to their opponent, play high. So I think Sanchez in those big games could give United that little bit extra that maybe they've been lacking, really.
Which is where you want Lingard in there as well, because, you know, of all those players, he's probably the quickest, Rashford as well. But, you know, if he's going to play on the left, then he needs to be... you need somebody with the legs of Lingard in there. So it'd be interesting to see where he does fit in. But I don't see why this ever matters anyway. You know, every top club needs to have two players in every position. And, you know, United, the one thing they've really lacked is pace. You know, there is Lingard, but apart from that, you know, if Mkhitaryan's not playing, and he hasn't been, where is the pace in that United front line? You don't get it from Lukaku particularly. You don't get it from Mata, certainly. You know, they need... Mata's the one who's going to miss out, but they need somebody in there who's going to be able to run the line.
Mata's contract's up at the end of this season, exactly. Isn't he? So
at the end of this season,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Man United, without, I imagine, the services of Sanchez, will be at Burnley this weekend. A Burnley team that's gone six games without a win. Of course, Man United had that 3-0 victory at Old Trafford on Monday over Stoke, relegation zones. Stoke, also blessed with pace and using it to make their way out of the Emirates, is Theo Walcott, of course, Matt. Heed my words and take flight, Walcott, don't you know that it's insane? Eerily prophetic words there from Vampire Weekend in 2008.
It took only 10 years to come true.
Well, that's... Don't you think that's even more impressive?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's far-sighted.
Yeah. I am somehow really excited by the prospect of Theo Walcott on an Everton shirt in a way that I completely hadn't been for years about him with Arsenal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. But he's had a horrific ACL injury, which broke bad. It took 11 months for him to even come back. I think it was a year before he started his next game. And he had been doing so tremendously well until that injury, scoring freely. But yeah, I mean, he's capable of contributing 25 goals a season, at, you know, when fit, when firing.
Last year, yeah, he got 19 goals in 37, which, yeah. I mean, it's not earth-shattering, but it's still pretty good for a player who supposedly wasn't producing.
Yeah, and with assists as well. I mean, if Cenk Tosun is the player that they've paid all this money for, then, you know, he will get a fair amount of service if Walcott is the player that he was. But it's such a question mark. You know, he's not a leader, you know that much. The reason why he's been bombed out of Arsenal is because of the comments that he made after the defeat to Crystal Palace, in which he was the captain last season, when he said, we weren't prepared properly for the game. Wenger, after that, has not played him. You know, he has not started.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's funny, because guess who they're playing this weekend?
Yeah, Palace. Yeah, another tough fixture for Arsenal. I think they'll be all right, the Emirates. But yeah, he's somebody that you've got to, you can't have him with the armband. That's for sure. I was really interested that it was Wayne Rooney that was the one who persuaded him to join, because they've never seemed to see eye to eye when playing together.
I would never have imagined those two on the phone together.
No, exactly, because they are very different characters from very different backgrounds, and that seems to have shown again when you talk about on the field chemistry between those two players. They haven't really clicked. We're never playing for England. So, however, you know, if they can put egos aside and Theo doesn't feel like somebody who's got a particular ego, but no. if that's true with Rooney, then he, you know, I'm sure something will come of that relationship. Mm. I think they've got three good forward players now that they didn't have last season when they only were relying on Lukaku, and his departure has been obviously dreadful.
So how does that set up? You have what, Theo out wide, is it? Sigurdsson in the middle and then up top? Well, no, hang on.
No, I think Sigurdsson's been playing from the left. I think he'll probably continue to drift inside, Walcott the pace from the right. And Rooney is more of part of a three-man midfield, really, behind Tosun playing up front.
As a kind of false nine, or would there be an actual striker in there?
No, with Tosun.
Sorry, yeah, right. I think in the early stages against Spurs, OK, they then got absolutely floored by them at Wembley, but Tosun did quite good sort of target man play in that he pinned Davinson Sanchez back for a flick-on for Rooney early on in that game. Mm. Then they had that goal disallowed, which again came from his flick-on from a corner. So if they can get more of that from him, I'm also quite excited about the idea that they might have Bolasie on one side,
mm.
Walcott on the other, maybe put Sigurdsson back in the middle rather than Rooney, and then have him playing off Tosun. I think that could be quite
tasty. This with Sam Allardyce on the bench.
I think centre-forwards like playing with Walcott as well. He had a good relationship with Van Persie, had a good relationship with Giroud. And I think because he's so quick, defenders have to defend deep. And if you're someone like Tosun, who's it looks like a penalty box striker, then that suits him very nicely. And it's interesting as well, if Walcott goes straight into the team for the game against West Brom, he'll be up against Kieran Gibbs, who I think was his best friend at Arsenal.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Oh, also, Walcott, I'm pretty sure, was a boyhood Liverpool fan.
Oh, he was, yeah.
And used to idolise Steven Gerrard. But then again, you know, being an Everton fan's never stopped players at Liverpool becoming idols there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Everton taking on West Brom, of course, they met a couple of weeks ago and it was 0-0. Arsenal, meanwhile, as we mentioned, Matt, taking on Palace, and Arsenal had a 3-2 win at Selhurst Park.
A rare defeat for Palace. You know, actually, Palace are one of the top three or four sides
in
terms of
form. That's their only defeat in the last 12 games.
Exactly. And it was hard won. It was a late goal from Sanchez. Nobody celebrated with him.
Oh, that was the game?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right, and Ozil's in doubt for this one as well. In general, what's the mood going to be like? Is the atmosphere going to be lifted if Sanchez goes, or is there going to be a general feeling of the last lifeboats have left?
I think among Arsenal fans, a lot of them are tired of his antics.
Sanchez?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, actually,
among the players, though, what do you think it's going to feel
like?
Yeah,
no, a lot of the players. I mean, a lot of the players wanted him in, definitely, because they felt that he was a great contributor to the side results. But, you know, some of those that I've already mentioned, the likes of Giroud and Ramsey, just didn't like him as a human being. And he was very isolated. So I think it could lift them. And particularly if these prophecies that Wenger's been saying, and he was, you know, really unusually hinting about a transfer potential with Aubameyang in his press conference.
Yeah, so this is Sven Mislintop.
Mislintat. Yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
So who's got a big bulging dossier of people he used to have at Borussia Dortmund.
I'm glad you said dossier. he's a guy who has the I don't speak German, so I can't tell you what it is in the vernacular. But he was known in Germany as the Diamond Eye. He's the guy who identified Lewandowski from Polish football, Kagawa from Japanese football for less than £500,000. Usman Dembele, you know, gambled with an eight-figure sum for him when he was at Rennes, and you know, it was a surprise that he was brought in. And all of those players together, you know, worth in excess of to Borussia Dortmund, that they've received in excess of £150 million for those players.
So why spend
in 70 the aggregate
million euros on a 28-year-old who we all know is, you know, everyone. It's not new to anyone that Aubameyang is, you know, an exceptional striker who, you must say, has similar character issues, or has shown similar character issues to Alexis Sanchez in what, the last 18 months, really.
He's been suspended a couple of times by Dortmund.
But what he brings is pace through the middle, which Arsenal, you know, haven't really seen from Lacazette. That was the idea, but they haven't really seen that from him, that dynamism. And somebody who can get you a goal a game. And if he is able to reunite him with Mkhitaryan, then that's a heck of a partnership. And I think Arsenal have done rather well.
Do you think they'll bring both those in January?
I do, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, not necessarily in January, but I think Aubameyang is desperate to get out of Dortmund. Dortmund, you know, Michael Sorg has been fairly clear that he's not really very welcome there anymore. They feel that his punctuality has just been so bad, his timekeeping, that they need to freshen up and get rid. They're looking at trying to get in Batshuayi by all accounts, which is interesting. Surprising.
But what seems clear now is that Arsenal, more than anything, are kind of trying to save face. You know, I'm not sure that these players necessarily are the players that they need.
Are you not really?
I'm not convinced Aubameyang at that age, at this amount of money, with the problems James has mentioned, is the kind of signing Wenger would usually like to make. I think the fact that he's lost his best player means that he's going to splash the cash on someone. I mean, like you say, he's usually not that open. He usually doesn't declare an interest in a player until 5 years afterwards when they've gone on to become world class. But now he's quite openly saying, yeah, we're going to bring someone in, which I think is a massive change of attitude from him.
We'll also see if Aubameyang fancies Thursday night football, because, to be frank, that's the likely scenario for next season.
Well, not if they win the Europa League. I mean, and there is still that vague, slim possibility. But actually, I think what most Arsenal fans will be pleased about is the fact that you mentioned Sven Mislintat, and it will be Raul Sanjay as well, who they've acquired from Barcelona. What this does declare to the world is that this is transfer policy being taken out of Wenger's hands.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, he would have preferred Martial than Mkhitaryan. United wouldn't let him go, but you know, he would have been the man. So this is very much Mislintat's work, and I think that's a very good thing. And if they bring in Johnny Evans as well,
right,
then it's not a bad window. It's just a shame that Xhaka is always still going to be playing for
Arsenal. In the meanwhile, are Arsenal going to beat Palace this weekend, Michael Cox?
I think they'll really have problems, actually. It depends on the defence. There's a chance that both Koscielny and Monreal could come back. That would be a big boost, because they will probably play in the wide areas of the defence, and they'll be up against Zaha, who I think is one of the in-form Premier League players. I fancy Palace to get a result.
Okay.
Do you?
James?
Well, they haven't won away to Arsenal since 1994, but yeah, I agree. I think they're in the kind of form that can cause Arsenal problems, particularly when you look at how badly they defended against Bournemouth, how badly they defended against Forest. Okay, that's a different side. And Palace, even though they're looking for a striker, seem to have found goals from Bakary Sakho. And so I think I can see it wouldn't necessarily be an upset if Palace went there and won, to be honest.
Zaha's feet faster than David Blaine's hands. I mean, he is spectacular with the ball at his feet. But I still think Arsenal will be okay.
All right. After this, we'll catch up on that Sean Dyche earthworm story and discuss what on earth happened or didn't happen at Newcastle this week.
Huddersfield travelled to Stoke this Saturday in the glamour tie of the Premier League weekend. The Potters have already let in 50 goals this season, and they'll probably let in another couple against the Terriers, before Paul Lambert inevitably inspires Saido Berahino to hit a hat-trick in the second half. Well, with two up from Paddy Power, David Wagner's team would still be the winners, because you can back any team in the Premier League or La Liga to win, and if they go two goals up, Paddy will pay out immediately as a winner, even if that team ends up losing. Head to paddypower.com to find out more. T's and C's apply. Win, draw, win singles only. Excludes shop and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Yeah, is this a wind-up? Danish striker Søren Andersen says probably the reason that Sean Dyche has husky tones is that when they used to train together, he would eat earthworms. He would pick earthworms up from the training ground and say, lovely, and chew them up. Is this a wind-up?
I hope not. I love this because I think some people like to portray Dyche as some kind of prehistoric dolt. And instead, this is him, again, realising something before his time, which is, you know, we should all be looking for new sources of protein.
Protein.
Yeah, you know, eating, well, worms are insects. But,
right.
You know, doing this, and he was doing this years ago.
Sorry, that's if you're so talking true. About prehistoric dogs, isn't that what prehistoric man did? Was eating grubs from the ground?
I don't know.
So it's just reinforcing the stereotype.
About, worms, of course, is that they have their flesh contains their memories. No, that if you let planarian worms go through a maze, and then you feed those planarian worms to other planarian worms, those ones will automatically know the right route through a maze.
Okay.
So presumably he will have inherited a lot of knowledge of the undersoil of whichever training.
Imagine if he basically gets someone to go and source these worms that are living in other teams' football pitches.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he... Yeah.
Science fiction for some, but the new reality of football for others.
Mm.
That's relating to Man United Burnley, which we kind of touched on. It'll happen this weekend. We'll be back to discuss it on Monday. In the meantime, let's discuss what didn't happen at Newcastle. Tuesday, the breaking news that the Amanda Staley Consortium was not going to be buying Newcastle. Quite the opposite. Mike Ashley saying there was never really a negotiation. They never really had an offer. What's going on, Matt?
Oh, who knows? There are so much smoke and mirrors. It is said that she has $29 billion of assets under management. I've always been rather sceptical of that.
But she successfully managed bids before, no? The Man City thing she was involved, Hicks Gillette, she was involved in that one as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, but that's different. Being a broker, an estate agent, to all intents and purposes, versus being a fund manager with, you know, a massive amount of other people's wealth under your management is a very different thing. I'm not sure that she does have that kind of resource available, and I think that's the conclusion that Mike Ashley has probably reached himself. That her PR people are claiming that this bid has gone in, and you know they're mystified as to why he should be saying all of this. But I always am very, very sceptical of anybody who declares who they are before a bid takes place. You know, let's remember that so many proper takeovers have taken place. The one that she was involved with at Manchester City, for instance, came completely out of the blue to everybody. You know, Taksin Sinuatra was the owner of that football club one day, and then suddenly he wasn't. And the sovereign wealth of Abu Dhabi was behind it. You could say the same of Liverpool with, Fenway Sports Group. When they came in, people weren't signposted ahead of long in advance of that. There was a court case going on, but they came in and took it out. You know, these things happen very, very quickly if people are serious, and they don't end up talking in the press beforehand, and that's what she's done.
Well, assuming there's not another group labouring silently in the background, what does this actually mean for Newcastle? Phil Wheatley says, are Newcastle now doomed with Ashley pulling plug on sale? And Jez Byes says, is Rafa Benitez now favourite for the next decent vacancy anywhere in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's very much open to those offers in the summer. He's frustrated with what's happening at Newcastle. The squad isn't good enough for the Premier League. I think he's done well to, you know, to have that good start, and they're really living off that. So I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I'd be amazed if he's there next year unless there is a takeover.
So it's certainly a big blow, one would imagine, for the morale in the dressing room, especially with a trip to Manchester City coming up this weekend.
Well, I mean, yes, obviously. But I think in terms of team spirit, you know, those players were perhaps fearing that they would be out, or there'd be other players coming in and they'd lose their place to them. They might be sure of their places in that sense. It might actually, you know, galvanise the team in some way. You know, that's often happened when, you know, clubs have run out of money, which isn't happening at Newcastle, but there's a lack of investment there perceived by the manager. But, you know, I don't think it could necessarily be as negative. I don't think they'll be complaining that they're not going to be, you know, making. Well,
Hosslou needs no competition.
Yeah,
what he needs is a goal radar, and he doesn't have one. And I don't think he's going to magic one. Just
he scored last weekend, Matt.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah, but that's the exception to the rule. What's he got? Three, four, five?
Four goals. Yeah,
four goals this season as the number nine for Newcastle. Hardly the natural inheritor of Alan Shearer and Malcolm Marshall, is he? No, Malcolm Marshall. Sorry, he was a cricketer.
Malcolm McDonald. Magpies' last three visits to the Etihad have ended with scorelines of 4-0, 5-0 and 6-1. So City have had the best of this of late. Aguero got five goals in that 6-1. Five. Although they did face each other just the other weekend, and it wasn't a million miles away from being a draw.
Benitez took an incredibly defensive approach at St James's Park, just parked 10 men behind the ball. Only really in the last 20 minutes did they attack. What's happened since is that teams have given City a fright and indeed beaten them by pressing high up the pitch. Palace, to a certain extent, did that. Bristol City caused them a bit of a fright, and then Liverpool won. Will Newcastle do the same? I very much suspect not.
Yeah, I mean, Benitez is, there's the stat that he's kept the most clean sheets at the Etihad after Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah, he's taken teams there on four occasions and come out with a clean sheet. But I would suggest that they were with teams that are slightly better, like Liverpool and
with
Chelsea.
With a good team playing against a rubbish team.
Yeah, exactly.
On the subject of Man City, Matt, I know that you're bursting to tell us something.
Yeah, well, I think that this is a very interesting turning point potentially for Manchester City. The fact and the run of results that Michael's been talking about, and the performances, you know, squeaking past Palace and Bristol City of all teams. They do work very, very hard, Manchester City. They work really hard. They're very well organised, but they are pressing very, very hard. And that's a characteristic of all Pep Guardiola teams. His squads tend to get quite a lot of injuries. Certainly at Bayern Munich they did.
Is 12 points a big enough margin for them?
Yeah, without question. But I think that it will be eroded down to a lot fewer than, you know, they will not win the league by double digits, I don't think. Certainly if they're getting the injuries that they risk getting. I'm not at all surprised that they are looking for new fresh blood. You know, if those injuries do strike, then this could be a question mark for City. And therefore, for next season, after a World Cup, you know, if you've got a few injuries this season and they're playing, you know, 60 games, as they probably will be, with a World Cup at the end of it, I think it could be very, very interesting next season. What happens?
Crisis in store for Man City. All right, nice one.
Tweet us at The Totally Football Show and find us on Facebook, also at The Totally Football Show.
Hotline Jim, what beacons of hope do you see for each of the bottom three at this stage in the season? Oof. That's a tough question, isn't it? So Swansea are bottom. They're hosting Liverpool on Monday. Swansea did beat Wolves in that replay, FA Cup replay midweek. Liverpool, though, 18 without defeat, and they won the reverse fixture 5-0 at Anfield. West Brom are looking for their third win in a row, and Stoke, who, as we mentioned, got beaten 3-0 at Old Trafford on Monday, but Paul Lambert was only sitting in the stands. And do we owe Paul Lambert a bit of a kind of revision of, there was a slightly negative hot take to the news of his appointment in Monday's, kind of live in Monday's Totally Football Show. Now that we've had a little bit more time, can we offer some appreciation of what he might bring?
Well, I very much enjoyed his Norwich team in the Premier League.
His Norwich team in the Championship even more.
Yes, I can't say I saw much of them, but they were great.
But the numbers were great.
Yeah, I mean, but if you look at the Norwich team, they scored a lot of goals and conceded a lot of goals. Ooh. What Stoke really need is someone to come in and fix the defence.
Oh.
And I'm not sure that Lambert really is the man to do that. And it's not going to happen anytime soon, because at the moment they've got Glenn Johnson, Eric Peters and Ryan Shawcross all out. So if he's trying to assemble his best back four in the training ground, it's going to take 2 or 3 weeks before he gets the right players in place.
Shawcross might be back in apparently for this weekend, Matt.
Well, to contextualise Norwich, he came in when they'd just been beaten 7-1 by Colchester United under Brian Gunn, and that really was, you know, the lowest ebb that any team could possibly hit. And that's, you know, after they tumbled out of the Premier League. So he was able to go in and say, right, lads, you know, you are Premier League footballers. Two years ago, you were playing at Old Trafford. Here you are. Look at this ignominy. Look at the surroundings, and you've just been gubbed here at Layer Road. So it was something that he could, you know, that was a great catalyst for him.
Is there not the same context?
They've just, you know, Old Trafford, they've just been beaten 3-0 at, and he is football's most miserable. There's absolutely, you know, when you listen to his interviews at Aston Villa, I was talking to Shay Given about him this week, and he actually said, give him a bit of time, because he obviously played under him at Aston Villa. He said that, you know, he'd had the rug pulled from underneath him. So many good players had gone from that Villa side under his management, because they were restructuring while trading, and it was really hard under Randy Lerner. So that 1 point a game that he got for Villa is probably slightly not entirely representative of where what he's capable of. But at the same time, that Stoke side, if Bet365 actually do what they should do as the third richest owner in English football after Abramovich and Dubai, Abu Dhabi. You know, they can, with £3 billion of turnover every year, they can invest more money than they ever have done in Stoke. And if they do, they need to bring in the pace that team simply does not have across the board, and they do have a chance. That's your beacon of hope for Stoke. Don't necessarily write off Paul Lambert, but for me, I don't like his style as a manager.
Speaking of Randy Lever, what's your beacon of hope for West Brom then?
I don't really have one. I think I think Alan Pardew is a big reputation with not a lot behind it. I think that he's had better teams than West Brom fail underneath him. And
Michael, have you got a beacon of hope for the Baggies?
I think Pardew shored up the defence. They were really shambolic.
Which
towards they were
the probably
end.
About to lose Johnny Evans, no?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, again, is that beacon of hope is suddenly snuffed out.
Snuffed.
That could be a problem. But they were surprisingly shambolic defensively towards the end of the Pulis reign. And I think even when they weren't quite getting results in the early weeks under Pardew, he did improve them. I'm not sure they've got the attacking quality.
Where's the goal scorer? Yeah.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest with you, it's an obvious thing to say because this is how a league table works, but I'd put good money on the bottom three being the ones to go down. I just don't think they're very good teams. I think.
What about Swansea and the remarkable new manager bounce they're having under Carlos Carvajal?
Carvajal.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Carvajal.
Yeah. Sorry, this is a bit getting to me a little bit. That everybody thinks he's Spanish. He's not. It's Carvajal.
Carvajal. But that sounds Spanish to me.
No, Carvajal. Would be Carvajal would be Spanish.
Okay,
but it's yeah.
All right. Anyway, him, Carlos,
Cici,
yeah, Swansea, James, keeping quiet over there.
Well, no, of these three, the least I have to say about is Swansea.
Really?
Well, yeah, because you know, I think it's
which one have you got the most to say about?
Well, I was going to say about Stoke.
Go on then.
Well, no, I think they have got some options. I mean, they can bring back Bojan from loan. They've got a couple of other players that are out who, like Marc Muñeze, who's the centre-back, who's at Girona, who they could also bring back. Apparently, Lambert also had that time, has spent a lot of time out going around watching Bundesliga teams train.
Mm-hmm.
He has his past there, speaks German. Apparently, they're looking at Kostas Stafelidis, the Augsburg centre-back, to come in and basically help them stiffen up that defence as well. So, yeah, they seem to have more options than West Brom and Swansea. You look at Southampton at the moment, who they showed some guile against Watford, getting 2-0 up, but then just completely fell apart. So, I mean, they haven't won in 10 games. So,
and they've got Spurs this weekend.
So.
Jamie Carragher says of Pellegrini, when I played with him, I knew he would never be a manager.
Wow. Did you cite any particular reason for that?
I mean, just the character, the kind of character just he didn't. Was. He said he was in complete disarray all the time.
He's had quite a successful career, even if this last bit hasn't been
He's
that
not
special.
Been a good Southampton manager, by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, it's not worked out. We'll discuss Saints perhaps a little bit more later on. We'll also be talking about Chelsea, and original the excitement there on Wednesday night. Phil Brown, another top manager in news, and going a little bit continental in a couple of seconds' time. Listeners, the January transfer window is open for business, and if you think you can identify better value than Chelsea did when they spent $50 million on a washed-up Fernando Torres back in 2011, then you need to check out the football stock market, Football Index. Football Index is a new way to profit from your football knowledge and make some money. Buy players, build a portfolio, earn dividends, and sell at a profit, and a tax-free one at that. Because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can try Football Index and trade up to £1,000 entirely risk-free. Just head to footballindex.co.uk, enter the promo code TOTALLY, and if you don't love Football Index, you'll get a full refund with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Download the app or play online at footballindex.co.uk and become a football trader today. Terms and conditions apply. You must be over 18. Deposit required, and please, trade responsibly. Listeners, breaking news, putting the end in Southend, Phil Brown is out. Ian McIntosh, our Shrimper correspondent, 5 years he was there. He was almost as permanent as his tan. What happened?
It had been on the cards for a little while. Phil, I think, had actually done a decent job there. Got them promoted a couple of years ago into the third division. Only just missed out on the playoffs on the last day of last season. But this season hadn't quite felt right. There'd been a little bit of discomfort off the pitch. And then form in the last 2 months has just gone off a cliff. 8 defeats in 9. And all of a sudden it's gone from, can we get back into the playoffs, to, oh my God, we're getting relegated. So you can understand why the board have made their move. And while I don't agree with everything the South End board do, they do generally give time to managers. And 5 years is an eternity in the Football League.
Certainly is. It's a results business, isn't it?
It really is.
Who? Any word yet on who's coming in? I think I can guess who your choice would be.
It's my birthday today, and I've had some lovely presents already. But if they announce Chris Powell today, I think that would make it.
Wow.
That would make it. I've already texted him. I've made it quite clear to him how welcome he'll be made.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only choice. There shouldn't be another option.
Can I just say, Macca, happy birthday?
Oh, thank you.
Macca, do we share a birthday?
Is it your birthday too?
It is. It's Pep Guardiola's.
I'm guessing you
Peter
do.
Beardsley's.
Peter Beardsley's, yeah. 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 So, tough time.
Wow, so it's your birthday as well.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, is it your birthday? It is. Happy birthday, you. Come on, everybody.
Happy birthday.
All right. And to everyone who's having a birthday this year, you know, whether it's today or another day, super. Let's talk about some other managerial news, because it's been a big week for managerial appointments.
Nathan Robbins touching on one of the big stories when he asked, who do you think will manage Wales for friendlies?
Yep, very good.
Yep, Ryan Giggs, who's taken over Wales. His former Man United teammate Phil Neville taking over the England women's team, despite, as Marina Hyde was pointing out, never having managed nor applied for the job. He has been number two to David Moyes at Man United and Gary Neville's number two at Valencia, which worked out really well for both of them. And a coach, of course, with the reasonably successful England under-21s. Is this just how the FA works, Matt? Or doesn't work?
Yeah, I guess so. Look,
go on, you're going to defend Phil Neville?
I think he deserves a chance. I think Marina's right to suggest that perhaps this isn't right, that it does rather diminish the importance of that team. You'd have thought that somebody with a bit more experience might come in. But then how do you judge people in the first place? You know, Hope Powell didn't have any experience to speak of when managerial experience at all, in fact.
No, but she did at least have experience of one part of the job, as opposed to Phil, who's, with the greatest respect in the world, he's a nice chap and I wish him all the best, but it is it does smack of cronyism, doesn't it?
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, I mean, yes, I don't disagree with that,
yeah.
but at the same time, you know, it isn't unprecedented.
No, but that's...
It has happened before.
Isn't half the point, though, particularly with regard to the women's football team, that it's... They do want to do things that are unprecedented, given the way that things have been handled in the past?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Simpson was not right for that job, was he? But at least you're guaranteed that you're not going to get inappropriate behaviour or
from
allegations of it in the past from Phil Neville.
That's probably
one,
fair.
One box firmly
ticked. Was it not the case that the FA's first three choices all turned them down? I really
like Stoke City.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Italy. Serie A's back this weekend, and we did a special golazzo, in which, in our attempts to convince you that it's all very relevant, we ended up talking with Gabriele Marcotti about a game from 1999. So that was nice. You can listen to that on the Golazzo football podcast.
It was very well recommended on Twitter.
A lot of people were very kind about it. And we talk about Inter-Roma, which is coming up Sunday night. Modestly, I would suggest that perhaps the more interesting game this Sunday is the one at the other end of the day's viewing, which is Atalanta-Napoli. Here's a question, actually. Cocu Fetishist says, in the light of Atalanta-Napoli, what's the next likely destination of Gasperini? I've heard some rumours about the vacancy at the Azzurri.
Yeah, I think he would be perfect for that job because he is someone who has brought through a generation of players in a league where young players don't often get a chance. And, he's not only kind of found players in their academy, and they have got a good generation coming through, but taking players who are still young in their early 20s who were kind of thrown on the scrap heap by bigger clubs like Milan. So from that point of view, he's definitely, I think, the outstanding candidate for it. Really.
In the meantime, be delighted if he sticks around at Atalanta a while longer, because they are one of the more enjoyable things to watch in Serie A right now.
Yeah, and they're really quite unusual. They play a way that I don't think any other team does in Europe. They play 3-4-3. They kind of empty the middle, just play it all out wide. Yeah, there's this stereotype of Italian teams being sort of very slow, one-paced, and instead Atalanta are very aggressive, get in your face. And in some respects, that's quite unusual, because I think a lot of teams need to just stand off and try and get themselves in a shape.
Can that last all the way through to April, May? Because that high energy, high intensity doesn't tend to last 38 or 50, 55 games
That's the unusual thing with them, because teams with a budget like Atalanta's, who've got into the Europa League in the last 5-6 years, have all really suffered in the second half in the season when they're in Europe.
Mm.
Whereas they're right where they are this time last season, in seventh, and not only in the round of 32 of the Europa League, but in the semi-finals of the Coppa Italia after beating Napoli only 10 days ago.
Yeah.
So
well,
really impressive.
The topic for a future Golazzo is maybe whether Atalanta are the modern-day Foggia.
Yeah, they beat Napoli home and away last year, and they obviously knocked them out of the cup.
Yeah.
Took the lead against them in the league earlier this season.
Napoli top of the league, of course, just one point ahead of Juve. Juve, I think, are taking on Genoa this weekend. Yes, they are. Ooh, is Daniel Sturridge heading out? This is the Gazetta's front page. It says, Inter, spunta Sturridge. Sturridge pops up. Is that happening?
Look, Inter need another striker, but it's a striker to back up.
To keep the table warm, the treatment table warm.
Well, this is the thing. They need someone to basically back up their star striker, Mario Icardi. Now, whether that would suit Daniel Sturridge, who...
Because Rafinha is the other fellow they're interested in. Not equivalent players, but...
Look, Sturridge, I think, needs to go and get game time somewhere. I don't think Inter, who are out of the cup, not in Europe...
Mm.
can necessarily give that to him. Yeah, particularly with, yeah, if he has aspirations of, you know, getting into the World Cup squad somehow.
Can they give him game time? Don't know. Can he give them game time? Don't know.
No, even
right.
Less.
Okay. Yes. All right, then. Hey, France, did you catch, Michael, in your global viewing midweek thing, PSG's 8-0 demolition of Dijon? 4 goals from Neymar. Did Di Maria got a brace, I think, didn't he?
Yep.
He nicked one off Neymar. So Neymar could have had 5. But then Neymar nicked one off Cavani. And the crowd at the Parc des Princes were most displeased, booing him, chanting, Cavani, Cavani. I think we've all got Julien Laurent's voice in our heads right now. When a penalty came up and Cavani, had he scored, it would have become PSG's all-time record goal scorer. But Neymar took it himself, and then there was booing, and there's once again talk of how long is he going to stay in Paris, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what PSG has become. There's no real point in playing these football matches if you're going to win 8-0 against a team who, I think, are low mid-table. They're not even a relegation struggler, really. So the interest ceases to be which team will score more and becomes which player will score more.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost more interesting what Neymar did in training. Did you see that piece of skill?
That back heel nutmeg thing.
Yeah. You might as well just watch PSG train rather than
against
watch
each other. Can I just point out that actually being the all-time record goal scorer of PSG isn't that big a deal? It's not, you know, I mean, that's 40 years of history.
I tell you what, on the subject of skillful Brazilians.
Oh yeah,
should we mention Ronaldinho, who's officially confirmed his retirement?
Yeah, I mean, we can do that right now. Let's do that right now. If you're wondering what all the fuss was about, there's a billion YouTube compilations. Or there's an excellent Sid Lowe piece in The Guardian, which links to a lot of them. A lot of people, I think, are going to go, didn't he retire anyway?
Yeah, well, he stopped playing about 18 months ago.
Okay. About 4 years ago.
And had genuinely said in the meantime, I haven't officially retired. If anyone wants me, I'm happy to play, but I don't want to do any training, which I think is an attitude that we can all sympathise with.
Legend. Flan Master P says, where would you rank Ronaldinho among the greatest players of the last 20 years? Similar question from Sam Carney, where is he in the pantheon of all-time greats? James?
Well, I mean, he is one of the most original players that I've ever seen. But it was, what, for a two, three-year period, really? And I think the problem is that even though he's when you watch him, there are certain skills, certain goals that really now until Neymar's come around, you just don't see even from Messi and Ronaldo. How Messi and Ronaldo have sustained that form for over a decade again makes you feel that Ronaldinho was a little bit fleeting, really.
Well, perhaps because of his off-field lifestyle.
Well, yeah, I mean,
a few of them do that.
But I think the Messi Ronaldo, sorry Matt, I think the Messi Ronaldo thing has kind of distorted it in terms of, if you look at previous Ballon d'Or winners, Kaká's peak was relatively brief. He wasn't a good player after the age of 27, 28. Michael Owen probably peaked at about 22, 23. So that kind of was the norm. Yeah. And when he was the best player in the world, I think 2005, 2006, he was so far ahead of anyone else. I mean, the Ballon d'Or 2005, second and third place with Lampard and Gerrard. Don't get me wrong, great players. But they're not all-time greats the same way Messi and Ronaldo are competing. It was Ronaldinho in a league of his own.
If futsal were our sport and not football, then he would be head and shoulders the greatest player of all time.
Right.
But unfortunately, you need a bit more about you, a bit of energy, a bit of running, a bit of, you know, which he had some of, but certainly didn't have the power that most traditional great footballers do.
Never forgiven him, have you, for 2002?
Not at all. David Seaman, of all people, mugging off David Seaman. How dare he? How dare he?
But the fact that he did all those tricks and those skills while also being the best player in the world just kind of elevates him to a status that I've never seen a player like that before. There's lots of players who get on the old...
Was he better than Ronaldo? Not Chris Ronaldo, but Ronaldo.
I would say he just about was, actually.
Really?
He played deeper and he could influence the game more. And, you remember that performance at the Bernabeu when he basically just ran past the entire team and scored a great goal and got a round of applause from the Real Madrid fans.
Yeah.
He just dominated games on his own.
I think El Diego could have been the same kind of player had he been on the kind of pitches that Ronaldinho enjoyed. You know, they were verdant plains as opposed to, you know, rutted war zones as they were in the 80s and 70s. And without people kicking him in the air, I think given more, you know, more lenient approaches from defences, I think that he could have been that good as well.
God, that would be a night out.
Maradona.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
And you'd be the best looking man in the room.
Yeah.
A shame that he's not going to be picked up by anybody. There was a talk that he was going to join Las Vegas. Whatever what club they have there.
He it was going to be has many, him, many times.
Him and Adriano.
Oh.
Yeah.
Again. Wow. Another great night out.
That is quite some Brazil team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With Ronaldo in it as well.
Yeah.
The Brazilian Ronaldo.
Yeah.
That what a bunch.
You probably heard this before. There's a great story about Ronaldinho towards the end of his time at Barcelona where they're all like, everyone's aware that he's basically slacking off completely. And someone, I can't remember who it is, a sporting director is looking for him around the training ground and someone says, oh, he's in the gym. The sporting director's like, oh, great. And he goes in there and Ronaldinho is asleep on one of the benches, which kind of sums up his attitude towards the end.
Now, back to PSG, because they have a huge game coming up this weekend against Lyon. Huh? 9 points behind, but they're going to be hosting PSG this weekend, Lyon. They are second. We were speaking of funky football moves. Did you see Dimitri Payet wrecking the Strasbourg goalkeeper, Alexander Ukidja? With a nutmeg that basically wrecked his hamstring?
Hamstring.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah. Anyway, Marseille have moved into third place and Monaco currently out of the Champions League positions in Ligue 1. Now, a couple of questions here. Adam Gordon, has any of the podders ever been recognised by their voices alone while out at a bar or restaurant? James, I know you get to buttonholed all the time.
Yeah, that's true. One of my favourites was I was coming in to do a pod and Mrs. H, who's an academic, she was on the overground with me.
Uh-huh.
And there was a guy sat across from us who works in her department, who's sort of always gets the kind of funding for university, and she's never really spoken to him. It's a bit awkward, but she thought that was going to happen because he kept looking over. And then as we
got... So she was excited. She thought maybe he's going to give me funding.
Exactly.
Does she go by the name of Mrs. Horncastle?
No, she's kept her name. But I got off the train and he came across and said, you know, I love the podcast.
Oh,
and
right. Did she get the funding? That's the question.
No, she didn't get the funding.
She didn't get the funding?
No.
Damn. More exciting anecdotes like that on the way very shortly on Totally Football Show, where we'll be discussing such topics as Brighton's clash with Chelsea this weekend. All that Chelsea FA Cup VAR business, Saints Spurs, Chinese horoscopes. It's all coming up. Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone. Brighton Chelsea or Saints Spurs?
Brighton Chelsea.
Brighton Chelsea, says Michael Cox. Chelsea drew again midweek, but they won on penalties.
Yep. Yep.
And it was a slightly tumultuous match, the one at Stamford Bridge. People drawing a lot of hot takes about VAR and its use.
Ian Laver, great tweet.
Okay.
VAR, he misses the what is it good for?
Yeah, fair, Matt, that's been explored.
No, I do like that.
I think James might have done that some...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I apologise.
It's a long time ago now.
It's a long time ago. Some people saying it only took about a minute to do the Iheanacho goal for Leicester, which, of course, also featured the intervention of VAR. I think was validated by the referee within about a minute and 7 seconds. Some people saying, there you go, there's no disruption. For me, that's quite a long time. Michael Davis, though, says, our VAR fears have been realised. This is regarding the Willian penalty that wasn't given for Chelsea. Penalty should have been given. He gets booked instead. Studio pundits all in agreement that it was a penalty. VAR disagree. Football's so subjective.
No.
What?
No.
You're a VAR fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I think, look, unless it is egregiously wrong,
yes,
and that wasn't, then you do not undermine the on-field referee.
But aren't you doing that by using VAR?
No.
No. No, if he is egregiously wrong, had his leg been 3-4 inches off the floor and he'd struck him in the shin and he'd gone down, he was clipped and it happened in the blink of an eye, I don't think that that is an egregiously bad decision. You see them given, you see them not given. Therefore, it is open to debate.
OK, is the question then, if you're still going to be left with this debate, is it worth stopping and disrupting football matches just to end up in more or less the same state that you were even without VAR? Of, I say it's this, you say it's that, let's not undermine the referee. Isn't that where we were before they brought in all these things?
No, yeah. I think, well, I don't think it is because, you know, if you look at, they've just had a masterclass in Serie A after the first half of the season to go through some of the sort of most high-profile incidents. And again, what they found is there have been, about, I think, 1,068 decisions taken in the first half of the season. And they've only got, I think it's something like six, I think they've only got 11 mistakes, which is 1%. So, yeah.
But even with VAR, they still get...
Well, the thing is, this is again a problem, and I think the biggest challenge for VAR anywhere is the education of the media and fans, because as Matt said, he's completely within his rights there to just essentially like it's at his discretion. You know, if at the end of the day, there are grey areas in football which are mostly handballs and contacts like that. And
anything with Mark Hughes in it. If,
yeah, if he sees it, and he
appears under certain lights to be using the blue rinse. Talk about grey area. It's really strange. I once tweeted this. That it was, I might have to retweet it because it is a very strange thing what's going on with Mark Hughes' hair. Sorry. Yeah.
No, but if he sees it and he makes the decision on it,
yeah,
then as unless it's a clear error.
Mm.
Then the video assistant referees, all they can do is invite him to review it.
Just one thing on the Iheanacho goal.
Oh, yeah.
It's the second time he's made history. You know, he scored the first VAR goal. He was also the first fourth substitute. So you're now allowed to use a fourth substitute in extra time.
Yes.
Right. Red cards in that match for Chelsea for Pedro and Morata. In both cases, diving was involved. Or what the referee perceived to be diving, which will, of course, affect them as they take on Brighton at the Amex this weekend. What's happening with this Andy Carroll move? Headline in the Daily Mirror on Wednesday, angry Chelsea fans say they will burn down local library if Chelsea moves for West Ham striker Andy Carroll.
Wow. Why a library?
I don't know.
Burning books. Is that what we've come to again?
I don't know. I want to know more about that story.
What about Carroll?
About that and about the library more than anything.
Yeah.
I think this will be a difficult game for Chelsea.
Okay, well done.
Can we
no, absolutely, Michael.
Can we go into that?
Very much so.
I think it'll be a difficult game. Brighton are really well organised defensively. I think Fabregas could be out injured. The fact that Morata is suspended, I know he's not playing very well. But Conte doesn't have any options. He doesn't like playing Batshuayi, so it means Hazard will probably play higher. So who's going to be creating the chances? You'll probably have a midfield four of Kante, Drinkwater, Bakayoko and Willian. It's not the most overwhelmingly creative team I've seen against a Brighton team who sit really, really deep, probably press less than any other Premier League team. I wouldn't be surprised if it's, a sixth draw in a row for Chelsea?
Yeah, it's a certain 0-0 because Brighton don't score goals either.
Yeah.
What about Leicester-Watford? Leicester haven't conceded a goal this year.
Yeah, which is curious because they've been without Huth, Morgan and Simpson. So you're sort of in that time they've really had a kind of patched up defence. With either Beniluan or Maguire partnering Dragovic. So it's
counter attack is the best form of defence.
Yeah.
You know, it's the power of pace. If you've got a team, and it's why Iheanacho, somebody asked, has there ever been a less deserving trailblazer than Iheanacho? It's why he isn't working at Leicester because he's not got that pace. He's somebody who needs to be in a team where they're constantly attacking and pressing teams back. He's a fox in the box. But they have such unbelievable pace on the break that every team is very wary and they necessarily have to defend more deeply. So
I was at Stamford Bridge last week for the 0-0 and Leicester were just outstanding.
Yeah.
Genuinely really, really good. Should have been 2-3-0 up by half time. They tailed off at the end when they went down to 10 men, but they looked really solid. And Mahrez was, when he's on it, I think he's up there with Hazard as the most exciting player in the Premier League.
Wow. For me, they are the best of the rest. Outside of the top six with initial caps, they are, for me, absolutely the best.
Are Arsenal in the top six?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, no, I'm asking. these are changing times that we're living in.
Only to look at the Premier League table to confirm that.
Okay. They're actually, they've got a little cushion, haven't they? What, about 4 or 5 points or
three,
something?
Three, I think it is.
Three.
No, five, yes. Five. Arsenal's 8 points or 9 points off, and Burnley are 13 points off the Champions League.
Okay, super. Burnley, we mentioned that. They're taking on Man United. West Ham play Bournemouth. Oh, they'll be a bit pooped, probably, West Ham. They eventually got past Shrewsbury. Clean sheets in both games for Joe Hart, which is nice.
Doesn't win him back his place.
No. Okay. Bournemouth, of course, coming off that big win against Arsenal last weekend. And the other game that's happening this weekend in the Premier League is Saints against Spurs. Luke Osborne observes, February 16th is Chinese New Year. Is Harry Kane on course for the most goals scored in a Chinese calendar year? Or does Alan Shearer have that record? Is this going to be the end of, if not a year, then certainly Pellegrino's reign at St Mary's?
Well, I don't know about that situation, but I think that the form Tottenham are in and the fact that they absolutely thrashed Southampton 5-2 less than a month ago, and Southampton were really flattered by that result. They just seem to have the balance in the final third. Son's in great form. Ali's maybe taking more of a backseat role, but still playing well. Eriksen plays that assist.
I think he's playing really well. I think.
Okay, but he hasn't been the star. Stars have been Kane and then Son in the last few games.
Yeah, but he's missed goals by very slim margins. And some good saves and you know just past the post. I mean, but he doesn't take as many shots as Harry Kane. I genuinely think that Ali is arguably the most underrated forward player.
He's quite rated, I think, isn't he?
But this season, everybody's been saying, oh, he's off the ball, he's not doing... I think statistically it shows that he is, and you look at his performances, I think he's been playing really, really well. Son has been benefiting because of his pace and his running in behind. Ali's passing is not quite as good as Eriksen's, but not far behind, and he's a great
finisher. The first two or three months of the season, he was off the ball.
Yeah, but people are still clinging to that narrative. I don't think it's fair now.
Are they?
I think he's doing really well.
I'm not sure he's been underrated. I think
I'm clinging to that narrative.
I am. He's playing well.
Adrift in a sea of information.
People have been saying he's playing well, haven't they? I haven't heard any criticism of him in the last couple of months.
I've been thinking it.
Reading it. Don't know.
Thought police.
Yeah.
I think he's a very good player. And I think that this England side is really, really exciting. I can't wait for the World Cup.
That clip was from 2007.
2007, there wasn't a World Cup.
Or the Euros.
Yeah. Not for another 3 years.
2005.
We didn't go to those years. It was 2008.
No, you're
exactly.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but that's
I'm looking really
qualify.
Looking forward to 2008 Euros because Steve McLaren's England aren't there.
Yeah, but in 2007 we were still qualifying. That's my point. Yeah, until that Croatia game.
Well, no,
that was the Croatia qualifier, wasn't it?
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Moscow in England. We're knocking it under Steve McLaren, knocking it long to Michael Owen. It's just like for the last 25 minutes, thinking, what on earth? Michael, do realise Michael Owen is 5'8", don't you? Has anybody even let you know this, Steve?
Happy days, eh?
Oh,
happy
my.
Well, you know what? That's what's happening this weekend. But if you're wondering what kind of odds you can get on any of those matches, you're in luck, because Paddy Power himself is about to discuss just that with Ian McIntosh.
Thanks, James. It's time to play Hotshot Jackpot, and I'm here with Paddy Power.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or good day.
Whenever you're listening, that's the joy of podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Hotshot Jackpot, it's free to enter. You just download the app, and that's free as well, and pick the first goal scorer in six fixtures. And if you're right, you stand to win upwards of 100 grand. I haven't been very right over the course of the season so far, but I've got a feeling about this one. This one looks good. Arsenal against Palace. Arsenal all over the place right now. Palace, Roy Hodgson's form's been incredible. Zaha.
Yeah. Arsenal have to be short price favourites, but probably they wouldn't be the ones to be putting in your football account this weekend. So I think Zaha 10-1. It's going to be a Palace player. Why not him?
All right, Burnley against Manchester United. Burnley tailing off a little bit now. Romelu Lukaku here?
Yeah, I think that's a decent shout. I mean, United were good when they needed to be good earlier in the week. And Burnley are... it was always going to happen. They had to go through a kind of a quiet patch, didn't they? Because they probably don't have the strength of squad of some of the other clubs. Lukaku hasn't been banging them in like he was before, but he's 16-5, a bit bigger than 3-1. As a type of team, if he gets a bit of service, he could certainly knock in one or two.
Okay, I think a lot of us forgot that Kelechi Iheanacho was actually at Leicester, but it's Leicester at home against Watford. can he continue this scoring streak after two against Fleetwood in midweek?
I was going to say, but he reminded us in no uncertain style the other day. So he's 9-2. He's one of the favourites to score first. And you got, even though it's only against Fleetwood, there was obviously a bit of emotion there with the whole Vardy situation and all that. But at home to Watford, you'd expect Leicester. This is the sort of match where they could rip Watford apart. And that being the case, there could be a couple of goals in there. And Iheanacho is probably a reasonable shout, to be honest.
And last time Manchester City hosted Newcastle, Sergio Aguero got 5. So got to go for him on this one.
Did he get 5? I'd totally forgotten that. Oh my God. Yeah, Newcastle must be a little bit worried about this weekend because the City backlash, like God, because like whatever way you look at it, the match with Liverpool was a brilliant match. Liverpool probably deserved it, but City are going to come back strong. And what a team to play. Like Newcastle, to have Newcastle down at home for City, it must be a really, really nice fixture for them to come back in because Newcastle have been defensively frail, shall we say. And Aguero's 11-5 to score the first one. You can be sure, I'm absolutely guaranteed Aguero's going to score at least one. Will it be the first one? I don't know, but hopefully it will.
Yeah, it looks like one-way traffic that game. Is it last chance saloon for Pellegrini at Southampton? They've got Tottenham in town. I reckon Son Heung-min for this one.
Son, yeah, why not? But I mean, yeah, I think the... It's hard to say last chance, Lou, when you're hosting Spurs, and Spurs are one of the toughest teams to play against. I mean, when they do tear you apart within 10 minutes, like Kane can score 7 goals, and maybe Son will score the first one. But yeah, he's 5-1, so he's one of the favourites, and you got to think it's unlikely to see Spurs not winning handy here. So yeah, he's going to get one of them, I'd say.
All right, well, one of the many eye-popping moments of Liverpool-Man City was Oxlade-Chamberlain suddenly bursting through and crashing one home. So him to get one against Swansea.
Do you know what? I mean, he's a sort of player that maybe that's exactly what he needed because he'd just been kind of, I don't know, kind of just motoring along at 50% the whole time. And now suddenly he gets a bit of a hug from Klopp afterwards and all that kind of thing. And suddenly he's like a typical kind of young football player with a bit of confidence is all he needs. But Swansea will struggle, obviously. They're rock bottom on the table. He's 15-2 anyway, the Ox, to score for Liverpool. Now, it would be absolutely typical of Liverpool to go out this week and get beaten. After beating City last week, but the odds would suggest they're odds on to win, and Ox at 15-2, when his gander's up, why not?
You can download the free Hotshot Jackpot app and find these odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18+ only, biggambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, stop. That's it then for today's edition of the Totally Football Show. We return on Monday. Hopefully you'll join us then, listener. For now, it's... Thank you so much for coming in, and goodbye, Matt Scott.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, thank you.
Oh, us as well. James Horncastle.
Thank you, James.
And Michael Cox.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll catch you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
If you enjoyed the Totally Football Show, maybe you'll enjoy the Totally Football League Show too. Give it a listen, let us know what you think, and if you like it, you can subscribe. You'll find it in all the places where you'd usually find this podcast.